You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.
Hi, I'm Kim Salmon. I'd like to have a quick word about public radio, particularly 3CR. The thing about public radio is that it's more open than the more formatted types of radio to what's going on around it. So when you listen to it, you're more likely to hear a reflection of real life. And 3CR, being in the heart of Smith Street, Collingwood, is a particularly good example of what I'm talking about. If you'd like to subscribe, the number is 94198377.
You've been listening to the same. You could never understand. Feel the fortune flowing. You know it is.
There are many good reasons to adopt measures that would increase active transport mode share. Not only would it lead to reductions in transport costs, less congestion in our urban areas and cleaner air, it would lead to people living healthier and longer lives. That's from Joanne Vanslon, from the Manager of Environment at Austroads.
Well, we know where we're going, but we don't know where we've been. And we know what we're knowing, but we can't say what we've seen. And we're not little children, and we know what we want. And the future is certain, give us time to work it out. That's
right, and we'll be working it out over the next 28 minutes here at Yarrabug Radio Show. You're listening on Radical Radio, 50 years old this year. Podcasting, streaming, or on that old AWA transistor in the kitchen. Many thanks to Amy Goodman, although, as Faith pointed out, Amy's had a bit of a holiday, the first one for 30 years, I would imagine. We should acknowledge, actually, that Democracy Now! In America is celebrating their 30th year anniversary this year too. So we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about modal share, active transport, and the infrastructure that encourages and helps people be able to change their modal share. So joining Faith and myself, morning Faith. And Inch Farhar, good morning to you. Let's start that again, actually, just as we Road to Nowhere goes into the background. Good morning, Faith.
Good morning, Val.
And joining us this morning to talk about bicycle infrastructure, how, when, why and how much. Intro, good to have you back.
Great to be with you.
That's our way. Where are we? I'm sorry, I've thrown myself a bit off loop here. I've just got to say, actually, if you're, I know Melbourne people can get a bit obsessed about the weather here, but to go in 1 week from long fingered gloves to me putting on sunscreen has got to be one of the world firsts, I think. So there's that to happen. But look, let's kick this off, actually, because we're going to try and spend most of the time. I think everybody's realising at the moment that actually, whether it's a unique opportunity to push forward for infrastructure or we're just repeating the same old stuff, we're going to try and spend as much time on that of the show, on that one topic. Faith, I know you and I could probably share a moment from Critical Mass on last Friday. Do you want me? You go first.
Well, mine's brief, but I was really just, I think the Critical Mass is often very joyful, but it was, it struck me as particularly so on Friday night. Everyone seemed so happy and it was a beautiful, balmy evening and it was just, yeah, everyone arrived glowing and one of the first things, you know, as you catch up with people, you know, they said was, that was so nice. That was such a nice ride. It was, and it was just the same old ride up Sydney Road that we usually do. But
It was, look, very well attended, which I thought, you know, the weather was lovely, I've got to say. And I would think, what were we going to say, nearly 200? No, 150. I'm not good at guessing crowds. But I think in that first block, there was probably enough bikes to block, you know, 100 metres of the top end of Swanston Street. It was very funny. Look, I had a... and it was lovely. You're right. Everybody was in a lovely, cheerful mood. There was no aggro. Corking's improved in all these, the newbies to critical mass, I've got to say. But look, I had this very funny moment, as you've just described, Faith, to get on the Royal Parade, then ride all the way up to Sydney Road. Sydney Road itself is lovely because you've got people on either side of the road engaging in the whole process, which is really good. So we've done all that, and with that bits around the city, the bit around Lygon Street, then down in front of the university, there was a bit of heavy traffic, and there was a bit of I'm going to use forceful corking, but it was everything was lovely and peaceful, but we were in control of things. Anyway, we'd turned off at Sydney Road. This must have been the last 200 metres of the ride.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going up
on the Albin.
Yeah, the up and then round. Mm. So everybody's going very slow and very quietly. And alongside me is, I'm going to say, mother, cargo bike, alongside her riding his own bike, that 12, 13-year-old boy. So obviously been on the ride. And I could hear him complaining to his mum. He said to her, "Hey, this is boring, this bit. Why aren't we blocking traffic?" And I just thought, oh, out of the mouths of babes. Mum's trying to say to him, "Go, calm down." The best thing he's picked up from the whole ride is, "Ooh, I can block traffic." Oh, God, it was funny. But a good ride, you know, and good to see Tim Reid, and obviously this is the way you keep campaigns running, Sydney Road. You just keep focusing on it.
Yeah, and especially with the Brunswick SkyRail coming up and that's really poor detours that have been proposed that you know, don't provide an equivalent riding experience, so you're going to have a lot of people who have to stop riding.
Yeah.
But there's not going to be any trains. It's, there needs to be a much better thought out solution, and one that also includes accessible tram stops so that the people who rely on the trains and don't have as many other choices can get on the tram. It was really good to hear Christian speaking at the rally too.
Sometimes we forget about those things very quickly. I mean, the promise to get equal access to trams goes back many years now. Look,
I got actually a comment on that because a few months ago I forgot to turn off. I somehow turned on the option in my Google Map to only give me accessible public transport options.
Oh, wow.
And for some reason I felt like wherever I'm going, if public transport, whenever I'm checking Google, it takes about 30 minutes more or 15 minutes more. Like I was like, okay, this doesn't make sense. I used to go this path every time, and it was about 15 minutes. Now it's about 30 minutes, and I realized I had the accessible only option on. That sort of put things in perspective.
Yeah.
How they are not accessible, you know.
Really poor. And especially if it. It's not always the case, but it may be the case that it takes you longer to get to the transport.
Exactly.
So then, I mean, really, you need more options, not less than everyone else.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Hey, listen, just before we move off critical mass and onto your bike moment, which I haven't forgotten yet. look, somebody handed me, people who are in Yarra listened, are closely following this, the northern end of Wellington Street in Yarra is up for... you know, approval, and actually how are we going to get it done. So, look, I was approached by somebody at the end of the ride who's, you know, young fella, just moved into the area alongside that top end of Wellington Street. Don't think he understood anything about the area at all. And he was telling me he'd been there for a month and he thought, you know, it had people putting up signs, no bike lanes, just, and there's a bike road. And he said, this is crazy. Anyway, here's one person who's just become noticing this, and he set up a whole individual grassroots, just him pushing the word out. So it's interesting how, I mean, we can go on about organisations, but a lot of times this just starts with one or two people, you know, just making their mark and starting. And very missionary he was too, which is good.
Well, and that Say Yes to Wellington Street campaign, what I think they've done really, really well is present all the benefits in this really clear, simple way and of just, because I think this is a trap, you know, that it's easy to fall into. They're not engaging with all the crap and the noise.
Yeah.
They're just presenting really well clarified, clear points about the benefits of that for everyone and just some of the facts, but without engaging and getting caught up in arguments. So yeah. I think they've done that really well.
Yeah. Now we move on to the highlight of the show.
Finally we get to Ashton's bike moment.
Cool.
All right. Yeah, no, my bike moment is also about how good the weather was last week for riding a bike. And I had one of those nights that I just couldn't sleep. I was checking the news until, I don't know, 2, 3 a.m. And then I got stressed that I'm not getting enough sleep for tomorrow, which is full of meetings and I don't know what to do. And yeah, so after that, in the morning, all I did was that, okay, let's see how it goes. Let's just get on my bike and go to work and I'll somehow manage through the day. And the weather was so good that by the time that I got to RMIT, which is where I work, I just felt like, you know, I'm ready. Like I'm ready to get this started with the day. The weather was beautiful. Sky was blue. It was, you know, the breeze in the morning. And yeah, it seems that if you don't have a good night of sleep, all you need is a nice bike ride. Yeah.
Yes. And well, it is that thing with people say, oh, I'm too tired. But they give you energy.
Yeah.
Like it's a restorative practice, not a...
Exactly.
It's interesting. We're getting into funny territory here, but I'll touch upon it, actually. We had the Deputy Mayor of Yarra come down and visit Second Chance Cycles, and I, at some stage, fell into talking about a bike moment, you know, which she took as meaning something spiritual. And actually, at some stage, she said to us as a group, well, I'm just summing up what I've heard here. I've heard a bit of this. I've heard a bit of religion and bikes. And I said, what are you talking about? She said, you. I'm looking at you now. That's what I was accentuating, that that ability to actually just transform that moment, you know, which is really makes a big difference. Hey, listen, we're going to stop for a quick news break from Bicycle Network, and then we'll be back talking about infrastructure.
Yarrabug would like to thank Bicycle Network for their financial support. Bicycle Network, a not-for-profit with 45,000 members, working to get more people riding for their health and well-being. Bicycle Network is proud to sponsor the Yarrabug program and support its important advocacy for safer and more accessible riding. By becoming a Bicycle Network member and or participating in one of their iconic riding events, you're supporting Bicycle Network's Ride to School programs and advocacy campaigns to make it easier for everyone to ride a bike every day. Visit bicyclenetwork.com.au for more information.
And you're back listening to the Yarrabug Radio Show with our guest today, Dr. Afshin Jafari from RMIT. And we invited Afshin in to talk about a bicycle infrastructure investment analysis tool that RMIT has developed. So maybe we could start off with telling us a bit about the tool. And I think what's really interesting is what problem is it trying to solve?
Absolutely. And I think it was nice to start the show talking about the campaigns and activities and activism that people do for bike, and I think that's amazing and really essential. But what we are trying to achieve with the tools like this is to really create a standard decision support tools that a planner, a decision maker can test and see what will be the benefits in quantitative number, in dollar value for their bike infrastructure investment. And I think it's important to really talk the language because this is the language of investment. And as much as everybody knows better infrastructure is more, better for the bike riders, it's safer, it's going to create a better city. But unless you actually talk about the specific benefits, it's really hard to justify an investment. And that's basically the gap that we are filling with this tool, that now a planner, a decision maker can test and get the number.
Mm-hmm. And so how does the tool work? How do we implement this tool?
So there are a lot of things that goes into this. So we had a few years of project working on this to create the tool. But basically what we do is that we model every bike rider and from where they go to from home to work, education, shops, parks, all of those places. And we also model car traffic, public transport use, and pedestrians, and as well as the infrastructure that supports their journey. And what we do then is we also have values of how much change will happen if you change something in the infrastructure. So how much new bike lane, bike riders we get if you build this much new bike lanes, and how much reduction in car use we get as a result of that. And then all of this is joined by a calculation of how much emission reduction, how much health benefit you get, how much reduction in crash risk you will have for bike riders. And then when you put them all together, you have this total benefit value that's what you communicate to a decision maker, that, look, this is not just about a kilometer of new bike lane. This is actually reducing the risk of crash this much. This is actually reducing the emissions by that much. And basically giving them the numbers to make the decision.
And the modeling's done specific for the context? Like it's
So we started the modeling. The first the work that we did was with City of Greater Bendigo.
Mm-hmm.
We have created the model. It works. And we just introduced it recently. And it actually has been a very interesting experience because when you go from a capital city and specifically inner parts of the city like Yara, you have lots of bike riders here and you have maybe a bit more different infrastructure. But when you go to a regional city, it's a different context. And it was interesting because if you look at the size of Bendigo, if you ride a bike, you can get to everywhere with a bike in a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah.
And that makes it a great case for using bike for everyday use and commuting and everything. But then the bike mode share is not that high. So we looked at why people or who are the people who are using bike today in Bendigo and how they are using the streets to go from home to work to education. And that was actually an interesting finding. I can talk about it more.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, so, look, I don't want to preface anything before you describe it. There's a big difference between urban and regional bike use.
So, I think the main difference is sort of two differences. Sort of one is the continuity of the urban form is very different when you go to a regional city. And what I mean is that you quickly switch from a sort of a business district area to a very much a suburban type of street. And whereas in Melbourne, it's very different. In a capital city, that takes, I don't know, maybe tens of kilometers to go from CBD to somewhere that is basically 80, 60 kilometer roads with nothing, not even a footpath.
Yeah.
But that's much happening much faster in a regional city. But the other difference is that, as I said, the size of the city is somehow perfect for bike because you can basically get everywhere with a bike.
Yeah.
Inside
the magical 15 minutes. But just what lessons can be transferred from one to the other, whether it's either way, backwards or forwards?
Yeah, so I think one of the key things that we found, and it was really interesting because we did a survey of bike riders in Bendigo, and we asked them to draw their bike journey for us on a map. And we had an amazing response rate, like 280 bike riders in Bendigo responded to our survey, and we ended up with about 500 bike journeys recorded. So they basically said, I go from this street to that street, and then that's how I go from home to work or home to education. And we used that to see how much people deviate today mm-hmm. to from the shortest path, shortest routes that they can have, so that they use bike infrastructure. And we found that in today's Bendigo, people are going about 30 to 40% longer mm-hmm. to use existing bike infrastructure. And that was actually a very interesting and important finding, because in a lot of the modelings that exist today, everybody assumes that bike riders just go the shortest path, shortest way.
Yeah.
But if you want to properly model, you will need to actually consider that, no, actually people are willing to go. Not willing, but they go further away to find a bike way.
And I think even in the Netherlands, it was a while ago now when I was there, there was a study that found that even when the choice was between two types of bike infrastructure, people would make that longer journey if it was a more pleasant one and not...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But there is a limit. So if you
yes.
make that a sort of a not reasonable deviation or detour,
yeah.
you will not get bike riders. Yeah. And yeah. Yeah, we are probably aware of the detours that are too far and people just don't
yeah.
take them seriously.
And so how does the model take care of the, like that 60% who are interested but concerned? Mm. How do they fit in and with the modeling? And
yeah, so another thing that we tried to do in this project, look, all modelings are simplifications.
Mm.
And there is a saying that says all models are wrong, some are useful. So what we did was we tried to come up with a set of assumptions that makes the model as useful as possible for our use case. And one of the things that we definitely wanted to include was gender. So male and female in our case, you know, as different bike riders, because we have the evidence that they behave differently. They have different tolerances for risk, as well as whether someone is in the working age or they are children going to school, or they are retired over the age of 65 or something. And we basically tried to see how much each of these different cohorts or population groups behave when it comes to bike infrastructure. And we found that female bike riders that are in working age are very much sensitive, much more sensitive to bike infrastructure than male bike riders in working age. And the number that was that we found was interesting, because it said, assuming that we have a kilometer bike journey, for a female bike rider in working age, if only 100 meters of it, it's highest stress for them, that is equal to about 2 minutes increase in bike journey travel time. So if the journey was 10 minutes, now it feels for them like it's 12 minutes. Now, that's a simplification. Mm. I know, even one bad intersection could be really, really problematic for a bike journey. But assuming the assumptions that we included, that was an interesting finding.
Yeah.
How fascinating. The the other thing is, did style of bike lanes get reflected in a few of the bit of the data, I presume?
Yeah, and that's another innovation we did in this project, and I think it's an important discussion to have. And usually any types of painted section of the road that has a sign of a bike in most of the modelings is considered as a bike lane. But in this project, we said, no, we are not going to do that. So we actually, if the bike lane is less than 1.5 meter in width, or if there is a car park on top of bike lane, we do not consider that as a bike lane. Uh-huh. So that's, we just said, no, this is not a,
not, yeah,
a proper separation. And also what we do is that we are classifying the streets not just based on the bike lane, but also based on the speed limit.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a street that is 30 kilometers per hour and there is a bike lane, we categorize that as a lowest stress.
Yep.
But if the speed limit is 60 or 80 and there is a bike lane, even if there is a bike lane, you are not going to feel lowest stress when you are riding there. So we categorize that as having higher level of stress for bike riders.
Yeah. And that's important. I mean, that's one of the big faults with Google, isn't it? It prioritizes roads with a painted bike lane, but often the parallel road next to it with much less traffic doesn't have a painted bike lane just because it's, but it'll be the more comfortable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So it certainly sounds a bit more nuanced with the assumptions and that then.
Yeah, and that's also based on the idea that you mentioned that, you know, we have people who are more confident and people who are maybe interested but concerned, and, you know, people have different preferences. Some of them just go, you know, whatever is the shortest option, but some people are actively looking for more lowest stress experiences when it comes to bike. And it's important to have that lowest stress journey throughout the journey, not just at some sections.
Yeah.
So another thing that we do in these types of modelings that we do is that we look at the whole journey from home to the destination, not just how many sections of good you have as part of your journey, but actually is it continuous? Are you getting that as a proportion of the whole journey, not just kilometers as a separate number?
Does modal share in itself make a big difference? You're talking about, if you want to use Bendigo as an example, I presume it's down around 4 or 5%.
It's a bit lower.
It's a bit lower,
But the mode share, I think there are a number of things that are important when we look at mode share. I think one is that you need to have that critical mass of bike riders so that it becomes a
tipping point. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think the great thing is that now we are in most of our cities, at least the ones that I'm talking with, they acknowledge bike as a main mode of transport and are looking at that seriously. Another thing is that the more bike riders you have, they are going to create a safer environment for other bike riders because cars are going to be more aware of bikes when they see them more often. And then that's going to make it much more safer in that sense. And another thing that research is showing, and we found an found it in our own research in Melbourne, is that having a parent that rides a bike is very important. We found it to be a significant predictor of a child riding a bike to school. And also having friends or colleagues that ride a bike, also there are lots of supportive literature that shows that it's also going to be an important factor in you riding a bike.
So it's normalized in your social
circles. Exactly.
Yeah. And do we know, are tools like this used elsewhere or have been developed elsewhere in the world?
There are a number of tools that I'm aware they are under development or existing. But I think one thing that we are trying to achieve here, and I think we have made a good progress towards that, is to actually properly modeling bikes and bike riders' diversity, and not just putting them all under the umbrella terms of active transport or, you know, assuming everybody is behaving the same and really trying to unpack the behavior, which I think is a major innovation in our work.
Yeah.
Cool. We've spent many years trying to unpack. We never actually counted genders. So there are streets in Melbourne where the 70% of the commuters were female, but on a corresponding parallel one was 70% male. But the numbers kept coming back. It's the same all the time.
Anyway. Exactly.
Yeah. And if anyone wants to find out more about this tool, or are there other councils who are talking to you about using it soon in Melbourne?
You can visit our website, Fast Track, with just one T, .rmit.org.au.
And we'll look forward to more research and coming back and talking about more of the research. Because you need to put numbers on those things, don't you?
Yeah,
you know, exactly. No.
Yeah. The first thing anybody's going to ask you is economic benefits and where are the numbers?
Yeah, not everything can be quantified, like great experience of the morning ride.
No. Yeah, exactly.
But we can.
How's the happiness modeled into this tool?
Exactly, that's next step. Yeah.
No. Next step, let's keep them sideways. It's a little bit side benefit just for those cyclists. Hey, listen, that's all we've got time for.
Coming up next is
Lost in Science, which should be a bit of a hoot. You take care. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.